You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 234. The unread story is not a story. Ursula Gwynn.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. Now, guys, I know many of us have heard of the hero's journey and the writer's journey that was popularized by Joseph Campbell and for our film industry by Chris Vogler. But today on the show, we have a different perspective on the hero's journey. We're going to be talking about The Virgin's Promise. Now, The Virgin Promise demystifies the complexity of archetypes and clearly outlines the steps of a virgin's journey to realize her dream. And the writer of that book, Kim Hudson, and I had a fantastic and really remarkable conversation about looking at the hero's journey from a female's perspective, about a female's character and what her journey goes through, which is very different than the hero's journey. And it's something that was so fresh and new, and I really had not heard this in story before. And it is fascinating to look at without question. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Kim Hudson. I'd like to welcome to the show Kim Hudson. How you doing, Kim?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. Like I was telling you earlier, I really love your book because, and please remind me the name, I don't have it with me.
The Virgin's Promise.
The Virgin's Promise.
Stories of feminine, spiritual, and creative awakening, sexual awakening.
Obviously, we have to throw in the sexual awakening.
Yes.
Because it's interesting, you really kind of take the hero's journey, which is something that every screenwriter should know, even if they don't use it, they should know. But you turn it on its head a little bit and look at it from a feminine perspective. And I'm dying to kind of get into the weeds with you for it. But first, how did you get involved and how did you get interested in writing a book like this? Because there really hasn't, if am I mistaken, there's no other book like this, right?
No, there isn't, which really surprises me. The biggest thing is that phrase, all story from all time is a hero's journey, has just embedded itself in people's psyche. So they're not really looking. They'll say, oh, well, there's the hero line. But no, that's the energy of a hero, a fear-based journey to conquer something, including your own fear, and win the day. It's a very externally focused story. And a heroine is just a woman doing that job. Right. Whereas this one is the exact opposite. This is about turning inward and awakening to your true potential, your sense of connection to who you are, what your talent is, what your sexual orientation is, something that's authentic about you. And then how do we go about first discovering that, growing it, and then bringing it to life?
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I actually didn't answer your question.
Okay, good.
How did I actually get there? How did I? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I grew up in a family that highly valued the masculine, and so I just tried to do everything I could. I played ice hockey. I became a geologist. I jumped out of helicopters in grizzly bear country. You know, like I was really giving her. Wow. And even then, I started to recognize that when I was alone after the helicopter left, I did things in my own way. And I was actually good at finding patterns of mineralization, all those kinds of things, because I was trusting my intuition. I was going inward and discovering where that would take me. I trusted walking into the unknown. And all of these things are parts of a virgin journey. And virgin, I always have to say this, if I had a dollar for every time, virgin is what I mean is the original meaning of it, which means to be of value, to seem for your value, just for being yourself, like a virgin forest. It's commonly used in Jungian thought.
So. Not as virgin as in the 1980s comedies.
Yeah. Not as like men can count on, you haven't been taken before, you know?
Right, virgin kind of scenario.
Yeah. But it does actually mean, I mean, going from virgin to an active person and knowing sort of what you like and don't like, it actually is that. It's awakening to your sexual orientation. That's one of the most fundamental ways of finding your authentic self.
It's really interesting. It seems to me from the short conversation so far that it is an inward journey more than an outward journey.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because the hero's journey is all about conquering the dragon that is in the cave that is guarding the treasure, where this one is about conquering the dragon inside of you and discovering who you really are, which is, man, it's literally the flip side of the coin of the hero's journey.
Literally. As a matter of fact, as a hero, you're conquering, you're controlling, you're taking control over something outside of you. But actually, the dragon inside you, you're welcoming. You're exploring. What does it want me to know? What's the, you know, it's the opposite in every fundamental way.
I've said on the show many times, I'm surrounded by feminine energy constantly. I have no testosterone anywhere near me at any time. I have women, I've been around women my entire life, single mother, the whole ball of wax. So I understand more than most about feminine energy, not anywhere near as much as obviously you, but I do have a better take on it than most men do. And as I've grown older, what you're talking about is really interesting, because I think at the beginning of a man's career or a man's life, a boy's life, we are about conquering. We are about showing physicality. We are about going and grabbing the gold or the treasure and bringing it back.
Brass ring.
Yeah, all of that kind of, you know, macho testosterone thing. But as you get older, you know, even the toughest guys that I know, you know, Navy SEALs and other people like that, they start to, when that's done, they start to look inward. And then the beginning of that journey starts at a later time in a man's life. Again, very broad spectrum I'm talking about here. Not everybody, but most. And it seems to me that a woman's journey, and please, please correct me, it seems to be more an inward journey at the beginning of her life, trying to figure herself out in the world. Is that a fair statement?
I would say there's definitely, and particularly today, that we're on this place where there's room for women to be themselves, and yet there's still vestiges of like a dependent world. You get messages that, you know, either that you have to be pleasing, or that it's a male-dominated world and you have to sort of emulate men to get ahead in the world. Like, there's still those messages out there. So there is this starting out where you feel that you're meant for something, and it's in contrast to the environment that you're in, and you have to figure out a way to go inward, be strong enough in who you know you are. And I call it a secret world. Like, it's part of the story where you have to find a place where you feel like you're surrounded by friends, and that people want you to do well. And then you can play, you can make mistakes, you can laugh, you can step into the unknown and then figure out what it needs from you or what it has to offer. So we have that when we're young. But I would actually say at the time when, like, it's a circle. So your children leave and suddenly all your roles have drifted away, and you need to go back again. You need to circle back and find out, who am I now? I'm not the same person that I was when I first discovered myself. And you're sort of born again. You're sort of learning again to find out who this authentic person is today and then be that person in the world.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
So let's talk about the actual journey of the Virgin, our archetypal journey, which in the hero's journey, we all, you know, call to adventure and, you know, the point of no return and all these kind of terms that Joseph Campbell so beautifully built out. And then Chris Vogler talked about it so beautifully for the film industry. What are those key points in the Virgin journey?
Okay, I'll do my little party trick. I think that in 5 minutes, I can tell you a virgin story.
Okay.
And it can, if you'll hold in your mind, even something like Joker or Billy Elliot or Coda, Black Swan, all of these are really great examples of virgin stories. So I'm going to tell them in a certain order, but one thing I've discovered is it's nonlinear. You actually could tell these beats in any order, but those beats will fundamentally be part of the journey. Okay, so the virgin starts out in a dependent world where messages around her tell her how she should behave. But there's a price that she's paying. Either she's aware of it and she's hiding it, or she's even asleep to her own potential, but she's paying a price for conformity until one day she gets this opportunity to shine, this little taste of what it would be like to be herself. And she takes it. She likes it. And it's usually almost this moment of alchemy where the dancer gets the shoes and just the putting them on seems to activate something, or sexual orientation becomes clear because they take off their clothes and suddenly they know what they want. So now that they know a little taste of it, they want more. So they create a secret world because they're not ready to blow up their dependent world. These are actually their family, their home life. So what they do is they create a secret world so they can go back and forth between the two. And then the secret world, as I mentioned, they're learning to become more connected and playing with what it might look like. And they've got friends, they can make mistakes. But that going back and forth is crucial. They're learning the contrast between what they think they want their life to be and what their life is and why those differences have to exist. And they're kind of building a bridge until one day they start to expand to the point where they just can't stay contained. And the two collide, their two worlds, their dependent world and their secret world collide and form one. And the kingdom goes into chaos. A lot of pent up energy, there's synchronicities that have been held together. Suddenly there's permission and things start blowing up. But there's this moment where she recognizes, because of all that back and forth, that she can give up the belief that she had to behave that way she did in her dependent world. She gives up the belief that was keeping her stuck. But that's not the same as going forward in a new life. So now she's wandering in the wilderness. She's trying to figure out, well, I could go back and take everybody out of their pain, all this chaos, but with the full knowledge of that I actually have more potential than that. Or she could go forward, but there's no tangible proof that she could make a life. But she chooses her life because it's not really living unless she chooses to be herself in the world. But when she makes herself visible, someone, and it even could be herself, decides that is worth protecting, valuing. And I call it the reorder or the rescue. And so the world reorders so that there's a place for her to be in her natural shining form. And the amazing thing is the kingdom discovers that it needed what the virgin had to bring. Either there's now unconditional love in the world, or there is a new talent that she brought that has offered something new to the world, and it's better off. They often do a montage here. And that's the virgin story.
So that's interesting. It's a fascinating way of looking at it, because as you were talking about it, I'm trying to go through movies in my head. I'm like, where is, like, you know, my computer is like, tick, 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 like trying to figure out where you can place these, because the hero's journey, there's 1,000 of them. But this is interesting. But you said the word Joker. So this doesn't particularly have to be a feminine heroine. It could be male, because it seems like it's an internal journey. It seems, as you were explaining it, almost spiritual in nature, in the way that it, you're trying to find the authentic voice in you. So like, if you're Billy Elliot, all I want to do is dance, but the world around me doesn't allow me to do that. So it sounds like, okay, yeah. Billy Elliot, I get, but Joker is a really dark version of that. So can we break down, because Joker's a very popular movie. I love Joker. Yeah. One of the best movies of that year, and arguably of this last decade. Can we kind of break down Joker and kind of like go beat by beat a little bit with that? Is that, are you able to do that? Do you remember Joker well enough?
Well, God, I think I've written a blog on that, but you know, I was really hesitant to watch Joker. I can't watch horror. It like gets into me and I never can forget it. Sure. Never be alone again kind of thing. But once I watched it, that is such a spectacularly well-written movie. Everything that's in the background is telling you that dependent world. You listen to what's happening on the radio and the interviews, and they're all saying the dependent world is that if you do well, then you get your just reward. And therefore, people who are not doing well don't deserve to do well. Either they didn't work hard enough or they, like, so doing well means you deserve well. Not doing well means you need to suffer. And that's, you know, so there's this guy and he's trying really hard to smile for his mother, and that's his dependent world, right? He's trying to like, but it's forced because the world is not accepting him. And so he goes inward and he has this fantasy world and where this woman loves him, and that's his secret world, right? And it actually starts, the two worlds collide, where he actually starts being a joker in his real world. And that's when everything starts to blow up. And the thing about Joker is that the secret world is not always as harmonious as I made it describe. It's his best way to make sense of the world he has around him. You know, it's his mind trying to help him to navigate this world.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's harsh. But do you remember when he was sitting there talking with the counselor? And
yes.
And yeah, after when he's saying, you know, you're like, he's being told you're not getting meds anymore and this and that. And he goes, do you notice you don't listen to me? And do you notice that, you know, you're not doing any better off than I'm doing? Like the system is not helping either of us. Well, that's his gives up what kept him stuck moment. He's like, mm-hmm. We don't have to conform and play our role in something that's actually not working for us. And so what would be other beats? Because they're not in the order. That's a great example of how things don't have to be same order.
And then I think if I remember correctly, when he was on the subway for the first time, and I think he shot those guys or something. There's a point where he crosses the line, where that is a kind of point no return. But it's like the flip side of that. Like there's a thing that he does that now he has to. You can't go back to where it was. He can't. There's no way. He has to move forward in the journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And when he chooses his light, it's kind of that awful moment where he's with the midget and the other guy, and
right.
He just beats the other guy to oblivion.
Yes.
And he's just like, you know what? I don't deserve this. And then he does it. And that's another thing about these stories is that they circle back again. So it happens again when they mock him on television. He basically chooses his light. He's like, you know, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. It's like, I deserve respect. This whole model where just because I have a learning disability or I'm a secret because my father's an important man and I'm an embarrassment, that does not make me deserve this kind of negative treatment. And he chooses his light. He says, I will not accept that. And even though at first he was actually just going to go out in a big bang and make everybody sorry, he ends up choosing his own life over somebody else.
And isn't it interesting that his choice, and this is when you said the world reconforms around him, and spoiler alert, please everyone stop listening or fast forward a few minutes, because I'm going to talk a little bit about the ending. But when he does all the things he does on the Robert De Niro Tonight Show thing,
yeah,
and he basically causes a riot. And the entire world is also like, yeah, we feel like you too. And all of a sudden, it all just literally the world reforms around him, and he becomes this leader
icon
of this movement where he was truly just trying to do it for himself. But he realizes that, oh, I'm not alone. There's a lot of more, you know, messages in a bottle, if you will, out there.
Right. Which is his first moment of having a secret world where he's actually among friends, but it's like the big world, right? And he even says in his interview that I wasn't trying to save the world. I don't have some big mission here. Do I look like a guy who's got a plan? I'm just actually being myself. right? I'm just trying to be real here.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And that turned out to be a guy in a Joker costume. and like, I'm going to take control of this.
And it's so interesting because talking about, you know, feminine energy and spirituality and sexual awakening, you don't think Joker, but no. which is a fairly testosterone. I mean, there's a lot of testosterone in that movie, but he has a feminine energy to him. Because he's really struggling. He's really just trying to figure things
very
out.
Very emotional.
Jesus, he's the Joker. I mean, very emotional.
Yeah.
Like it's a fascinating a study of story structure looking at that, because we'll talk about some other examples, but Joker is a fascinating one. Because it is, it's something you don't think about.
Yeah. One day I was listening to the whole story of Frozen. Mm-hmm. Talking about same storyline, but very different feel to it.
A little bit.
Where the woman, but you think about it, what is it, Elsa? I think it's Elsa. That she has a power and she's told that it's evil and she has to keep it in. And then she decides, you know what, I'm going to let it go. If you listen to the song Let It Go and sort of play the soundtrack or the track
I have
Joker
children
in your mind.
I have children. I've listened to that song too much.
Yeah, a million times. But think about Joker, the movie Joker, and then Let It Go, the song. You put those two together and it's quite phenomenal. The words speak to what he's trying to say in that movie.
Wow.
Do it. It's really fun.
That's pretty trippy. Everyone, please let us know what you think. If you could try to listen to Let It Go while you're watching Joker and see how it connects. It's like, was it watching Led Zeppelin with the Wizard of Oz and everything clicks on?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like the Dark Side of the Moon or something like that. That's hilarious. Now, can you talk about, because on the hero's journey, there are the archetypes, the wizard, the trickster. What are those in this journey?
So I have this theory that there's basically three big archetypal journeys that we all have the potential to go on in our life. I think in my life, a well-lived journey, if my life will be a well-lived journey, I'll go through all three of them. And we actually can do them in a masculine and a feminine way. So the first is your relationship to self. And the hero is, I in relation to my fear of life, I can conquer it and I can go out and be active in the world. So that's my relationship to self in a masculine way. And then in a feminine way, it's I learn how to turn the camera inwards and how to bring something authentic about myself into a physical form, almost like alchemy. So those are both a relationship to self. The next is, how do I cross the distance between me and somebody who is not me? And that's that relationship to another person. And how do I maintain myself and still respect somebody who's different from me? And that would be the warrior king and the mother goddess thing. And then the last one is this ultimate recognition that we are a part of a cosmos, of a bigger picture. And for the masculine, that would be the mentor, the philanthropist, this idea that I know I'm going to die and I'm going to pass on my knowledge so that there's a benefit from generation to generation. So it's this very concrete recognition that life is finite. And on the feminine side, it's the crone. It's the sense that life is all about connection and we're about to make a connection into the whole cosmos. So while you're still on the planet, you start to recognize that you can see the connections that other people might be missing. And sort of like a trickster, you go in there and you mess with their lives a little bit just to get them on the track, because you know that everything's connected and their connection to themselves is fundamental to everything else unfolding the way it's meant to.
I'm going to get a little deep here for a second, because as you were talking about that, it was very interesting, because at the beginning of my career, I went out to conquer. And I went out to go direct and I make movies and work hard. And I worked my ass off for 20 odd years in the film industry, working in post-production and directing movies and commercials and music videos and things like that. And it was very outward hero's journey. It was very out, must conquer, 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 conquer. But then, which is what's interesting, I looked inward when I was unhappy. I was lost for a little while. I opened up an olive oil company, and a lot of people who listen to the show understand that's a whole other story. So I got a little lost, and then I looked inward. And when I looked inward, I said, I need to bring out my authentic self and help the world. And that's when I launched this show. The Indie Film Hustle shows first, and then the Bulletproof Screenwriting afterwards. But I launched that show. And by being my authentic self, very much like the Joker, not trying to do anything other than just try to help whoever listened, it grew into where we are today and is where I found my true happiness. Even though I still enjoy going out and directing in the external, my true happiness is here, talking to you, sharing information. That's a completely inward spiritual almost look inside of what I'm doing. Does that make sense in the journey for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I find that there's two fundamentally different understandings of power. And you touched on them there. When you're in the hero mode, it's to assert your will even against resistance. That means hard work, long hours, overcoming obstacles. But in a virgin world, power comes from knowing yourself and then bringing that self into life and then supporting others in doing the same. And it's extremely powerful.
Oh my God. It's so powerful, in fact, that in the time period where I was doing the external hero's journey, let's say, I would have killed to have access to the people that I get access to now, who reach out to me now. It's fascinating. I have Oscar winners and I have legends and people in the film industry who want to be on my show. And I'm like, and I sit back sometimes, I'm like, isn't this interesting? How this whole story has turned its head. If you would have told me 10, 15 years ago, this would be the way, I would be able to do things. In is the key. It's not out, it's in. And again, when I was saying earlier, the out is a very young man's energy. It's the warrior in us. Mm-hmm. We need to go out and conquer. Yeah. And I forgot there's four stages of development: the warrior, the teacher. I forgot the four, but there's these four archetypes. Someone much more intelligent than I.
Someone else is not. Yeah.
Said these four things, and I was like, oh, that's so true. Because when you're young, you're a warrior. You go out to try to conquer, to show off physicality. But as the years go on, the physicality starts to go in, and you start to go inward, and you want to become the teacher or the mentor or the another thing. There's a couple other two stages, but it's so true. But it's so powerful that now, by going inward, coming out, being authentic, and trying to help others, is when all of the things that I was kind of looking for in the warrior journey is now literally handed to me on a plate where I can, I make relations. It's just interesting. It's just fascinating. Hopefully people listening, this is a little bit more of a philosophical, spiritual, and screenwriting conversation, but it's so true. The reason why the hero's journey connects with so many people, it is a metaphor for life. We all go through hero's journey at one point or another.
Absolutely. We need to do both. Like, I am never going to say that The Virgin's Promise is a better story than the hero's journey. It's, in life, we need to do both. There are things to be afraid of. We do need to set a goal, plan to not fall into every pitfall that life is offering. And you have to save for a rainy day, all these things that give us comfort and safety.
It's not everything. No, it's not everything. You're right. And again, as you get older, you realize that the hero's journey is not everything. And this inward journey is the journey that is much more powerful because it's tapping into.
And yet, and yet so under-recognized. People often think, I have to have a plan. I have to, I'll never have any power. And because this is such a power of humility, in other words, by the more you're doing and offering what you truly love, it's contagious. And it draws people into you that want similar things or that can feel inspired by you, and then you get inspired back. It always gives these unexpected gifts.
And it's so interesting because a lot of screenwriters ask me, what do I do to make it in the business? What's the secret sauce? And I go, you are. If you can tap into your authentic self and speak authentically through your writing.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
There's nobody in the world that could compete with you because no one can be you. And if you study, and I've had the pleasure of talking to many of these really great writers, they're all authentic to who they are. Tarantino is authentic to himself. Nolan is authentic to himself. Edgar Wright is authentic to himself. Eric Roth is authentic. They're very authentic to their where it's coming from. And that's something so hard to grasp when you're younger, when you're starting out. They're like, no, I have to try to be someone else that's successful. And I go, no, the thing that makes you successful is being you. And it's scary and terrifying to be you in the world, so as the vulnerable. Joker showed us.
Yeah. You know, one of the things, the screenwriting advice that it really bothers me is that you need to have constant crisis, that you have to have ever bigger obstacles to overcome. And people think that it's not an interesting story if you're not constantly showing this fear. And really, this inward story is the quest for love. And love is not always euphoria. You know, like there's heartbreak and there's all these things, but you fall in deeper into them. These are not obstacles to overcome, except for things that you need to explore. You know, like you don't fight back and push away. You actually go, okay, I'm curious about that. And the screen should spend time looking at a person's face and figuring out, you know, are they wandering in the wilderness? Are they giving up the old belief, making room for something new? You know, like these things are the challenge. And we want to see people feeling joy and finding their moment. And, you know, it's like About a Boy when he stands on the stage, and, you know, Little Miss Sunshine when the whole family gets up there because Gladys, I think is her name, you know, she wants to do a strip song, you know. So you know, it's these, there's, you know, it's so good. It's, and it has nothing to do with conquering some sort of, you know, or achieving a goal. It's about being in the moment and feeling passion and standing up for something.
Well, it's, story is about conflict, but it doesn't have to be external conflict. It could be internal conflict and internal journey that has to go through. And there is, I mean, so if we analyze, and I know what you were saying, like you have to have conflict all the time. Well, interesting situations happen when there is a barrier to break through. So if you don't have a barrier to break through, and that could be an internal barrier. It absolutely could be an internal barrier. Yes. You look at Little Miss Sunshine as such a great movie. I have to watch that again. I was talking to my wife last night. We got to watch Little Miss Sunshine. I don't remember it as well as I remember the ending. So good. But but that was, there was some external conflict there, if I remember correctly, but it was truly about her and her journey to express who she truly was, as insane as that end sequence is.
But also it was about the dad who had this belief that he had to be conquering the outside world. And when he was finally authentic in his love for his daughter, he was humanized. He brought his whole family together. And that turned out to be way more important than anything else he was trying to do.
Which is the moral of that story is like when you are able to touch the inner world and be authentic to yourself. I mean, it's funny because I've always told this joke. It's like, as you get older, you give less of a crap about what other people think. Like when you're younger, you were like, oh my God, what is anyone going to think? Like my daughters are terrified of what I do in public. And I'm like, oh, this is so much fun. So I try to embarrass them as much as possible. But as you get older, you know, when you get to the 70s, 80s, and you see the old man without a shirt on in his flip-flops and his long and his underwear going out to get the mail, and he doesn't care at all. That's the other extreme of that scenario. He is arguably very authentic to who he is.
He does, yes. Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong?
And he's really figured out what really matters.
His mask is gone. This is an extreme version, but his mask is gone. Yeah. And you know, all the stuff that we put on, like the suits or the armor, if you will, to go out, he is literally out there.
He's got the, he's got the white world. He's Yeah. In my world, he's a crone. He's yes. the one that's like showing us that really does that matter? And, you know, like really, you know, think about what you're thinking matters so much and know that you could just be free and everything is connected.
So there's certain characters, like I know you mentioned in your book, like the whore and the virgin and the femme fatale. Can you like I was thinking like Pretty Woman, is Pretty Woman an example? Is there versions of that in Pretty Woman, or is it very similar to just a hero's journey?
Oh, I think Pretty Woman is a very much a virgin story.
Okay,
she believes she's only worthy of bums, and then through this sexual experience. She discovers that she has a talent for business and she's interested in something and she wants more for herself out of life. So it's, to me, it's absolutely a virgin story. And really the shadow side of the virgin is when she herself becomes disconnected from her value. That's what the whore is, basically, where she has lost her sense that she is intrinsically worthy of love. And so then she doesn't take care of herself in the world. And it's again, it's an internal mentality that reflects in the way she's presenting herself. And sometimes it's because the environment has so consistently shown she's of no value that it sinks in, and that disconnection needs to be reversed and turned into reconnection.
And so, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say it's the same for the femme fatale, in that if that's the second journey of the feminine, where she needs to cross the distance between herself and another person, and she's lost herself, she's manipulating another person in order to have power in the world, whereas she hasn't recognized that she has her own type of power, and that she needs to bring that into her consciousness, and then she can exist in the world.
So like a fatal attraction. So like a fatal attraction, let's say, or a basic instinct. Those two characters don't realize that double indemnity or dress to kill or any of these, these kind of characters who are using manipulation, using their sexuality, using other things to manipulate people because they have not again gone inward to understand. And something happened to them in childhood, something happened to them in the world, that story, that's the narrative that they've built up. They're like, I've got to be this way to survive in the world. Is that a kind of...
And what it's done is that it's caused them to disconnect from the fact that they actually are powerful, that they have their own, you know, their own sense of love for themselves, and that could be enough. And that's what the story has to do, is not get them to like get some survival power. It's more like they need some love power. You're like, they need to bring that back to themselves. And then they actually can cross from being the shadow side of the feminine to the light side of the feminine.
I feel like this conversation is a therapy session for everyone listening, because it's like, really, you started into like, you're like, we're doing inner work today, guys.
Yes. Well, that's the whole thing.
We're doing some inner work. People are going to walk out of this, listening to this, like, well, Jesus, man, I gotta touch my authentic self. I gotta go inward. Yes. I gotta go into that cave inside of me and fight the dragon to get through, to get to the treasure, to get it out into the world.
You know, my workshops, people write to me and they say later, like, you know, they don't have writer's block anymore, because between the hero and the journey, there's always some structure to help them move forward. But the biggest thing is, they recognize it in their life. They'll suddenly go, oh my God, I'm wandering in the wilderness, you know? And I've had people really change their lives. Like, and right. Well, I was like, okay, well, that's on you.
I'm just talking about movies here. I'm just talking about movies and stories.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. I'm not a therapist, but you know, a lot of the things that we're talking about is, I mean, a good story is an analogy for life, and this inner story, which is why I still find this concept so fascinating. I mean, I've done 800 episodes on both of my shows, over 800 episodes, and I've never had this conversation with every single great story guru, screenwriter you could imagine. No one's ever had, never approached story in this way before. And that's what's so fascinating about this conversation for me, because it is something that's just not talked about. It is not talked about. It is not, yeah. It is not put out into the screenwriting universe.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
It's, you know, the hero's journey. We're good. Chris and Joseph Campbell have done a fantastic job.
Yes, they've got good PR. Yeah.
Great PR between Star Wars and with Joseph Campbell, yes. What Chris Vogler did. I mean, the hero's journey is everywhere. And Save the Cat and all of this stuff. But this inner journey is interesting. What other movies can you come up with that are great examples? Because I want the audience to really kind of have reference points.
Okay, so Jojo Rabbit, that's got the obvious secret world in it, and he's fighting, he's trying to conform to the Nazi ideal, and it's just eventually not working for him. He changes his clothing. We can see that stresses the part where he gets back to his mother and family. So that's one. Coda, that was just fabulous. Her dependent world is like her non-hearing family needs her. And yet it's contrary to what she needs to do for herself. So that was a great one. Good Luck to You, Leo Grant. Did you see that one?
I did not see that one.
It's on Netflix. It's new. And it's Emma Thompson, who hires a male prostitute
to
help her, with an awakening. It's really good. And it does follow the beats. Their secret world is in that hotel room. The Wife, where her secret world is that she's a ghostwriter for her husband, and the clashing of the two worlds is at the very beginning, where she has to be the dutiful wife when her work is actually getting the Nobel Prize, and that causes this it's a fabulous story. God, there's so many. Brittany Runs a Marathon, Lady Bird, An Education.
Black Swan, you said Black Swan as well.
Black Swan, definitely Carrie. There's one called Love, Honor, and Obey, which there's another one that I would never watch. Elliot Grove out of Rain Dad said, watch this. And I was like, okay. And I watched like 5 minutes. It's about a home invasion and this couple that gets brutalized. But anyway, I watched it for 5 minutes and I turned it off. And then I was like, I am a professional, so I turn it back on.
It's just a story. These are actors. Yeah. There's a director. Look, there's lights. Yes. I mean, come on.
Yes. Yes. And I tell you, it's sort of a black comedy. And it's about a woman who is forced to recognize what she's accepting from her husband. I don't want to give away too much, but it is a fantastic movie.
Is Sleeping with the Enemy. You remember the Sleeping with the Enemy? Which was Julia Roberts.
I thought a long time ago. Yeah.
I remember it just came to my head. I was like, maybe that's one as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does make sense. There's a lot of inner work, beliefs that need to be let go to get away, right? It's that kind of a thing. Virgin Suicides. That's another one where the mother has been so oppressive that they can't move forward. The Shape of Water is a great one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's fascinating where that there's so many examples, like you're saying, that's been
La La Land.
Oh God, yeah, La La Land as well.
Yeah. Trying to get her inner talent into the world.
So there's been so many examples that have been under our nose, but no one's really ever called it out before. This is the story, guys.
The pattern hasn't been described, but people, you see, the theory of archetypes is that it's in our unconscious, that it's there for us to help navigate through life. Right. And Joseph Campbell made one visible. So it's a lot more you can get to it. And I made another one visible. So, and there's, in my mind, there's four more. So I'm working on those. But
are you working on the other? You're working on the other ones?
Yeah. My next one will be the How to Cross the Distance Between You and Somebody Who Is Not You.
Interesting. So
the archetypes of marriage, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have been married for a long time. I understand. there's something that the title of your book mentions sexual awakenings. And this is something I just wanted to kind of touch on, because those films sometimes they're done perfectly and really well. Sometimes they're not. Mm. They're approached at, you know, there's a male energy or you know, it's not done correctly. So can you give me an example of a good one and a bad one, and the reason why it's good and the reason why it's bad, if you can?
Well, the 40-year-old virgin actually is a great example of delayed and then that final moment of awakening. It actually follows all the beats. Another one that I've always loved is New Waterford Girl. It's a Canadian film, and she lives in a small town in Nova Scotia where you're very limited and you should always stay on the island, and she wants to be an artist, so she fakes a pregnancy. She notices that pregnant girls get sent away, and so she fakes a pregnancy, and it's about her sexual awakening and her talent awakening and the whole community going crazy. It's a really funny, really good movie. So ones where, Brokeback Mountain, another one where it's, you know, secret world and the clash and the what society expects from you and never being able to overcome it. It's a very beautifully done sexual awakening. I don't really pay attention to the ones that are done really badly. I can't. It feels like porn to me.
So porn, not a good example of.
You know what? I would actually say there's female porn and there's male porn apparently, and male porn is just really about how can I get some excitement. Like it's just goal oriented,
sure.
Which is not the same as a sexual awakening. To me, a sexual awakening is this recognition that we have the power within us for great joy.
We'll leave it there, but I'm just trying to think of in my head of like bad ones, and I'm like, if they're bad, they're generally softcore porn, essentially. It's done incorrectly, that's basically. So if you see softcore porn, that's probably not the
that's right, it's not a virgin's journey.
But I like that
it's probably the male gaze too.
Exactly. But I like that you use a 40-year-old virgin, because that's a great example of a sexual awakening in a very obviously comedic way. But it was, he was a 40-year-old virgin and all the stuff that has to happen. And Judd Apatow he touches on, even in his comedies, he touches on inner stuff. Funny People and a couple of his other films touch on the inner. Lot in his work, I've noticed, even while they're being silly. So choosing her light, I saw that term in the book. What does that mean, choosing her light?
You know, this is saying that it doesn't really matter until it changes within her own heart. So a person like Janis Joplin, you can have all of the glory, but until you actually decide that you are intrinsically valuable and that you have the right to take up some space in the world and shine your light, it doesn't really affect your happiness. And it starts with an individual person. You need to find your happiness and find your connection. And then like a drop of water, it starts to spread out to other people. So that beat, Chooses Her Light, shows that it's not about other people saying, oh wow, you're amazing. It's about you deciding that you are of value and really getting that sense of self-esteem.
So that's interesting, because in Hollywood, you're surrounded by people going, you're great, you're beautiful, you're great. And yet we've all seen examples of people who were giant stars who either sabotaged themselves or, God forbid, you know, took their life, and they just couldn't choose their light. They couldn't allow it to, for whatever reason, if it's some pre-built glass ceiling that they put in their head, like, I'm not worth this. You know, I mean, John Belushi comes to mind, you know, who, number one album, number one show, number one movie in the world. And he was depressed as all hell.
Right. And the guy that was in Mark and Mindy.
Oh, well, Robin Williams. Robin Williams, is, I mean, he he had an illness. It was a mental, there was degenerative thing that happened to his brain that caused him to do that. Okay. But many of these, you know, and we've seen it. I mean, people.
So, you know what?
Go ahead.
What you were saying there is actually why that beat "Gives Up What Kept Her Stuck" is so important.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Because if you don't give up the old belief that told you you had to conform to that dependent world, then you have this constant dissonance that you're behaving in a way that's not in alignment with one of your beliefs. And that will always throw you off track. You'll always try and go back to be in alignment with that. So the Virgin's Journey notes that you have to have a moment where you consciously reflect and say, you know what? I don't actually still have to believe that. It might have served me in the past, but now's the time to cue the music, let it go.
I think this is just got time for us to even say the word, let it go. It's so true, because there are those limiting beliefs that we all live in. Now we're getting into the psychology and the Jungian aspect of this journey. But if you are told you're not worth it, you're not that, you could be the most beautiful human being on the planet, gorgeous, talented. And we've seen these people. We've seen these people self-destruct in front of our eyes. Anna Nicole Smith, I remember. I mean, she had everything. Right. And she did not feel worthy of this fame and accolade. She just couldn't deal with it. And I mean, whatever happened to her, of course. Marilyn Monroe, Marilyn Monroe was a little different. But,
still there was an element.
Well, she was Norma Jean. She was still, in her head, she was Norma Jean. She wasn't Marilyn Monroe. And to live up, I can't even imagine trying to live up to being Marilyn Monroe when she was alive.
Yeah.
I mean, she was, she was put up there as the perfection of the female species. I mean, at the time,
right.
Who can live with that kind of pressure? Until you can break through those own limiting beliefs or stories that you're telling yourself, you doesn't matter what kind of success you have. If you can't find that light within you, you can't go forward.
Exactly. And, you know, people try and tell this story about becoming your authentic self, and they just present obstacles, and then a light went on and suddenly they were themselves, right? And it doesn't read true on the screen. We never really break it down and understand that there's a lot of steps, you know, like that you're facing the unknown. You have to cocoon for that. It's too vulnerable to face criticism, and you know, and you have to recognize what your old belief was so that you can let it go. You have to consciously choose for yourself that you're choosing your light. It doesn't matter if the rest of the world sees you as bright. You know, like there's all these steps that to writing that inner journey that we tend to kind of, without a structure, just gloss over it. And then suddenly you got better.
She's like, boom, one day she just found her light and it's done. And now it's all. There has to be scenes that they are consciously figuring that out in one way, shape or form. And that's interesting. It's an interesting way to write it, is it make it interesting when you see that, because it's inner work. So it's hard to put that on the screen. So there has to be.
Yeah.
How would you do that? So give me an example.
Did you ever see Ever After?
Of course.
It's the story. Oh, you've got kids. Yeah. So there's this moment where she's been to the ball and everything's blown up and she's just like, okay, it is what it is. I'm just going to work hard again. And she's talking to her stepmother and she says, was there ever a moment that you felt love for me? Because you're the only mother I've ever known. And the stepmother says, how could I feel love for a pebble in my shoe? And then you see Drew Barrymore just, okay, I accept that. I've been trying to find love from somebody who will never love me. And just in a look, she gives up what was keeping her stuck. She boldly asked the question, she got the answer, and she accepts it. And so a whole beat done in just a look.
That's a really interesting, you're absolutely right. How many times have you gone to your parents looking for something, or gone to a spouse or a girlfriend or a boyfriend looking for something that they're just not going to give you ever? And then you go, oh, okay,
I get it now.
I need to move on. It's okay now. Thank you for letting me off the hook.
Exactly.
Another movie came to mind, Enchanted. That one is, if you start looking at that journey, it's very inward. Like at first she's a cartoon princess and has to stick within the world of being a princess. And slowly she starts to realize, no, I'm worth it. I'm not just I'm a human being, and I want to go do this and I want to go do that. And she awakens within herself.
I have a full range of feelings and I want all of that authenticity to be in the world. Yeah. And boy, the Amy, she just plays it so deeply. You know, somebody could have played that very superficially, but she got the whole virgin, you know, and if the actor gets it in their heart, it just flashes onto the screen. It's really quite something.
She should have gotten an Oscar for that performance. She was so good in that. She's an amazing actress, but that she is. She's perfect. Now tell me about, you know, where can people find your book and the work that you're doing?
It's on Amazon, both, all the kinds. It just recently got re-released, I think. So that's nice. It's through Michael Wiese Productions. And
how about your website? And your website and where people find you and your
story, course. Storyarchetypes.com is good. Where my website is.
That's a good URL. That's a good URL to have. And I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all of my guests. What advice would you give a screenwriter trying to break into the business today?
Well, when we've been talking about it, be authentic. Yeah.
Be authentic. Embrace your light is what you're saying.
Use your light.
Now, what lesson took you the longest to learn, whether in the film industry or in life?
In life, and of course, it's in life. So many. So let it go. I have a friend who's a psychic who says she's never met somebody who hangs onto their pain so long. So I'm afraid this is my life lesson.
Fair enough.
Gives up what kept her stuck.
And three of your favorite films of all time.
Oh, okay. Chocolat.
Yes.
Enchanted. And I'm going to have to say Joker. Wow. Well, or Parasite. They're both amazing. And they're all virgin stories.
What an amazing collection of films. That's amazing. Great collection. Kim, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for putting this out in the world. And I'm going to do my darndest to get this information out to the screenwriting public, because it's something that's just not talked about enough. And I think it's a new way to approach story. And one last question. Can you have the hero journey and the virgin's journey overlap each other in the same story?
Yes. As a matter of fact, it's not a person, it's an energy. And that energy the hero or the virgin energy can pass through the same person. But if you want an example, just if you were trying to, like, screenwriting, figure out how do I put the two together and have the stories work, Frozen, the two characters, Anna and Elsa, Anna's a hero, Elsa's a virgin. And they just, you watch them connect with each other. There are stages, the rescue reorder, that's a place where the hero crosses over with the virgin story.
So does it have to be two characters, or can this be in one character and do both?
It can be both. Yeah. So, there's tons where Ever After, she saves herself. The original writing of the Pretty Woman, apparently she saved herself in the end, and then he came back and they rewrote that.
Yes, they did.
But there's lots. Yeah. So you definitely, and we'll know this in our own lives, that you can be the hero in your own life, and you definitely need to be in charge of your own virgin's journey.
We will leave it at that. Kim, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thank you again for the work that you're doing. Appreciate you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me. This was lovely.
I want to thank Kim so much for coming on the show and dropping her knowledge bombs on the tribe today. Thank you so much. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to pick up Kim's amazing book, The Virgin's Promise, head over to the show notes at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/234. And if you haven't already, please head over to screenwritingpodcast.com, subscribe, and leave a good review for the show. It helps us so, so much. Thank you again for listening, guys. As always, keep on writing, no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.